Hello and welcome. You're listening to Fourth Estate, the show where journalists talk journalism and a bit more besides. Coming to you from 2SER in Sydney on the Gadigal lands of the Eora Nation, right across Australia on the Community Radio Network and directly to your device across the globe via podcast. My name is Peter Frey and my producers today are Anthony Dockrell and Michael Jones. Yes, I do need that much help. Coming up, Donald Trump has dubbed them fake news hundreds of times since he came to power, and now it seems the mainstream media in America has had enough. Over 100 papers and web titles in the US are coming together to counter the prolonged attack on their integrity. Is this a much-needed fight back or a case of too little, too late? Tom Ballard's program, Tonightly, yes, I'm sure you watched it, has been axed less than a year into its existence. Was this a case of the ABC moving on from a problematic, possibly unfunny attempt at daily satire? Or did the minister, Mitch Fifield, get a win? And also, trial by media. We've had the coverage of Emma Hussar and Ben Robert Smith has laid bare the media's role in what has sometimes been called the national blood sport of pulling down a tall poppy. Does the media have a case to answer for, or is this just a nasty, nasty case of sour grapes from Hussar and Robert Smith? And finally, and in honour of one of our guests tonight, Fairfax has released what might be its last full year's results, announcing a $63.8 million loss. Take that, Channel 9. Is this a sobering reminder of the hard road ahead for our media giants, or just a case of the decks being cleared before 9 takes over? Assuming it does. Joining me in the studio and across the country, we have Margot Serville, is a freelance journalist and editor and a contributor to Crikey. Welcome, Margot.
Thank you.
Carlo Lusikian is a freshly minted journalist for Sydney Morning Herald and The Age. He is also, I should say, the first host of this esteemed program. And until a minute or so ago, he worked for the Daily Telegraph in Canberra. Hello, Carlo.
Hello, Peter.
And joining us on the line from Melbourne is Andrew Rule, Associate Editor of the Herald Sun, a multiple Walkley Award winner, and incidentally, a co-writer of the Underbelly books. Hello, Andrew.
Hello there, Peter, and the panel.
Well, yes, and thank you all for coming and sharing your wisdom and erudition with our listeners. Let's start in the US. More than 100 newspapers in the U.S. will publish coordinated editorials in response to President Donald Trump's sustained attack on the media. The initiative was started and coordinated by the Boston Globe and is asking all newspapers and titles involved to publish on August the 16th, calling for an end to the dirty war on the press in that country. The large metros like the Houston Chronicle, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, Miami Herald, Denver Post are also signed up, as are a load of small regional papers. I think we're all aware of what Donald Trump has been saying about the news media, but here's a little example from August the 5th. The fake news hates me, saying that they are the enemy of the people, only because they know it's true, in caps. I am providing a great service by explaining this to the American people. They purposely cause great division and distress. They can also cause war. They are very dangerous and sick. So, is this a much-needed initiative from the mainstream media, or is it destined to fail? And as the media in the US have been getting on with the job of covering the news, but now it feels time to speak out against Trump's abuse and lies. Was it time to fight back, Kyla?
Well, you know, how many editorials did the newspapers publish saying don't vote for Donald Trump, and that did what? Absolutely no good whatsoever. There's nothing worse than newspapers reporting on themselves, and I think this is largely a waste of time.
Is this a wank? Is that what you're saying?
Basically, yes. Okay. I was being more polite than that.
Sorry, yes.
Just get on with it, really. I mean, just report the news, and, you know, what are people going to be reading the editorials go, oh my God, this is absolutely ghastly. We better vote this guy out. Come on.
Yes, Andrew, do you think editorials change anything at any time?
Peter, sadly, as you know, I've written quite a few over the years, ranging right back to the old Herald days.
Yes.
And I rather suspect not. And I think you're right about this, Tyler, that in effect no one's going to read 100 of them or 10 of them or 4 of them and get the cumulative effect. They're only going to read one or none. So there's not a lot of point, really.
No, okay. But
a gesture.
A gesture. A gesture, though, that's nonetheless valid in some ways, isn't it? I mean, yep. Insofar as, say, Margot, isn't it just an example of the news media saying, well, enough is enough, you've impugned our integrity, you've called us, worse than being called fake news, I think, is being called the enemy of the people. So maybe it's time we fought back.
I think it's a really dumb idea because it's like telling people to eat oatmeal because it's good for you. I mean, who does that? I think if you want to make people care about journalism, you have to sell journalism as a product. Think more about a marketer. Don't impose your journalism on other people. Find out what people want and give it to them. And, you know, the best advertising is emotional. So you have to find a way of connecting people's emotions to journalism and make them really care. Or you can be like Donald Trump and Breitbart. You can frighten people, and that works as well. But if the news organisations of America want more consumers, they're going to have to sell themselves.
Rather than talk about themselves.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh. There's nothing worse than journalists talking about the ethics of journalism to their readers. I mean, that's not what people... No one is sitting around going, oh, I wonder how the news media works. They just want to read the news.
Oh, well, I wonder whether the fellows you just left and the women you just left in Canberra are often wondering about the news media, aren't they, Kyla?
Well,
you know, the Liberals, you know, I mean, they seem obsessed with journalism at the moment. Certainly with the ABC.
Well, I mean, that's a separate issue. I mean, that's an issue of. I mean, we're going to probably talk about that
nightly,
but that's one of, you know, public money more than the idea of journalism, I think.
If Andrew, I know you've written a lot of fine editorials. I actually have read many of them, in part because I think you and I wrote a few of them together.
We might have.
And they were all great work. Do you think, though, that there is a? I guess. If someone said to you, if the bosses at the Herald Sun came to you and said, "Hey, this thing is happening in America. All this attacking Trump about, you know, fake news and enemy of the people stuff," yeah. Andrew, would you write the editorial today that sort of chimes in with that? What would you say?
I'd say how long? How many centimetres?
You are a true servant of the people, Mr. Rule. You really are.
Well, really. I mean, they pay me. They ask me to write things. I write them. I wouldn't be. It's not an offensive thing to write. It wouldn't sort of go against the grain. I think that Donald Trump has reached that stage, that sort of critical mass, quite a while ago now, where even those conservative people who wanted to sit back and at least give him a chance have now said, no, this is no good. And I think mainstream opinion is probably against him in reasonable circles. And that's not a sort of a, you know, that's not, I'm, that's coming from a reasonably dry, reasonably conservative person in me.
Do you think, would you agree with that, Margot? In a sense, what the media says, and as we're all kind of saying here, I think what the media says isn't and nowhere near as important as what the voters think.
Well, I did read a very horrifying piece on Twitter the other day saying that they'd surveyed, you know, vast swathes of Americans and found out that they're not going to change their vote. So, you know, I was completely wrong about Trump getting in 2016, and I may be completely wrong about him getting back in 2020.
Well, I guess we'll look to the midterms, won't we? Okay. Let's move on to real-life satire, because I often think that Trump is some sort of bizarre satirical show foisted on the world, and we're all going to wake up. You know, it's the Truman Show type thing. So the ABC has knocked off the alleged satirical show Tonightly. It's been axed, and the last episode is going to air on the 7th of September. So this news came hot on the heels of the ABC successfully defending a complaint made to ACMA by the Communications Minister Mitch Fifield, in which he complained about a sketch that lampooned the father of Melbourne, John Batman, and calling him the C word. Anyway, the ABC got off on that one, but fresh on the heels of that, as I say, Tonightly has been axed. Is this a win for Mitch Fifield, Andrew Rule, or is it just basically a win for good taste?
Both. here's the thing. You know, when you're the seconds player, Peter and panel, when you're the seconds player and there's trouble at the footy club, you get it in the neck pretty smartly. The champion full forward tends not to. When you're this guy, Ballard, who can't rate and can't get an audience, he's got to be very careful to keep his nose clean, which he hasn't, because it's a good excuse to axe him. So he's no loss, and it suits everybody to ditch him for any of the above reasons, including the fact that no one wants to watch him. Mm. Well, not many.
You know. No, 18,000, I think it was. So, Kyla, is this... you've watched Tonightly. Mm-hmm. I mean...
I think the number was 32,000 I saw reported 30. In The Guardian.
Oh, was it 32? Oh, sorry, yeah. I thought I
just
saw
to be 18. Fair to...
No, fair enough. Fact check me. I'm all for fact checking. Is it funny? Was it funny? Is it a great loss?
I found it, you know, moderately amusing. I'm not really a great reviewer of Australian comedy. I find, personally, that most ABC comedy comes from the same about 10 people who, you know, they've managed to get a stranglehold on ABC comedy, and that's what was shown. But, you know, to me, if it's cancelled, it's cancelled, and it's not no great loss. The only part of it that's a great loss is that the ABC seems to have taken a step back from doing anything that's kind of interesting or original or trying something new out. You know, they can do something else.
And I think that's the broader point, Margot, isn't it? I mean, part of the reason, not the only reason, I mean, one of the reasons is the ABC now has a whole channel devoted to comedy, which is a lot of air. It's got a lot of content it's got to find. But one of the other reasons, of course, has been the success of the likes of John Oliver and the fact that a lot of surveys of people in the US and elsewhere say that people get their news from such shows now. And that's in part the reason for doing a little segment about it on Fourth Estate. So tell me, what do you think about this? Satire as a form of news. Is this a new genre of news, do you think? Or maybe it always has been?
I just remember my parents watching things like The Frost Report when I was a child from England. I think the ABC has always had those kinds of programs. I think it's impossible to do Nightly without a massive team. I mean, you look at John Oliver and people like that, they've got, you know, tens and maybe even hundreds of staff. And I think Tom's staff was too small, and perhaps they were all stretched a little bit too thin. Perhaps he should have just done it weekly.
A daily or what is it, four times a week show would be, a massive challenge. Mm. Going back to this original point about Mitch Fifield, I mean, so there's not really been any secret in this ongoing stash on many areas of the ABC versus Fifield versus Turnbull in part. Do we chalk this one up as a win, Kyla, to the minister, or is this...
I mean, only someone at the ABC could possibly tell you what they were thinking when they cancelled that show. I mean, the minister's made no secret that he wants to hold... I mean, I guess if you ask them, the line will be that... You know, there's all this money going to the ABC, and all we're asking is that for very basic standards to be upheld. And when they're not, you know, we reserve our right to complain about that. You know, he's not forcing them to do anything. It's a complaint that is made, and often the complaints, particularly about the journalism, go through some sort of ABC process. I mean, you know, the complaint about Emma Alberici or the number of them. You know, the ABC itself came back and said, "Well, yes, here were a series of errors that we found." So it's not like the minister. I don't think it's particularly improper, because the minister's not actually forcing them to do anything apart from just have a look at the journalism that's produced and say, "Yes, that's fine," which they did in many cases, and "No, that's not fine," which they did in a bunch of other cases.
So this one isn't particularly an exemplar of anything other than perhaps poor programming.
What's that? Sorry, Tonightly?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you know, some people like swear words on TV.
Yes, I know. Swear words on TV, the C word. Have we crossed, Andrew Rule, have we crossed the line? Are we now in the situation where the C word is okay?
I think it is in certain settings in dramas where it fits the drama. I personally don't like it in something like this. I think it's bunged on for effect. I see it as sort of juvenile. I see a naughty schoolboy. I don't see a convincing portrayal of you know, a villain in a drama who needs to use it to get it right. I just think this guy's, he's shouty, he's sweary, he uses the techniques of a stand-up in front of a camera, which basically don't work.
I'm going to leave this Tonightly segment, but I did, you know, you are, if you like, a representative of the fine city of Melbourne, and I just want to know, what is it about John Batman? I mean, is there anything in his past?
Dead set, Rex Hunt.
And we'll leave that little bit of rhyming slang for interpretation of ACMA. Thank you so much on that bit. And now we're moving on to the media and how it conducts its business. It's been truly hotly debated in recent times. First, there was BuzzFeed's revelations on Labour MP Emma Hussar, which resulted in her announcing eventually that she wouldn't contest the seat of Lindsay in the next federal election. And that was after, it seems, most of the most sensational allegations against her have not really been stood up. And she's could have withstood an investigation into her behaviour. We'll get to that bit in a second. And then, unrelated to the Hussar story, has been the Fairfax Papers, who have been looking into a series of allegations of war crimes and alleged misdemeanours by the very decorated VC war hero Ben Robert Smith. And his attempt to have these allegations suppressed, and now it's being looked at by the Inspector General. So both Hussar and Robert Smith are complaining about trial by media. Let's look at Emma Hussar first, Kyla. Mike Seckham on ABC's Insider show at the weekend questioned the media's role in this, saying that they had become pawns in a factional battle of the New South Wales Labour Party. Does he have a point?
Presumably, he then went on to blame it on the IPA, Murdoch, and a whole bunch of other crazy things that he likes to chalk up everything to. Look, I don't, perhaps it was, there was a lot of, factional play. I mean, that's beside the point. I mean, Alice Workman and BuzzFeed reported on a certified fact, that is, the New South Wales Labor Party was investigating one of its own federal MPs. I mean, that is a piece of news.
Absolutely.
There's no way around it. That is a piece of news. Now, whether you should have, whether they should have gone and detailed all the allegations or not, I think that's really not that important. I mean, that the investigation part, that's 100% news. And here are the things that they're investigating. If you put it in that way, I mean, how could you possibly argue that people shouldn't know about that? I mean, that's the... I just don't understand.
So your point being that the allegation of, the claim of trial by media is hogwash?
Well, yeah. I mean, these are facts that are happening. I mean, not the allegations. They were obviously allegations.
Sure.
But the investigation was a fact, and these were the allegations that were being looked at. You know, Emma Hussar did not have to resign. That was her choice, or, maybe that was, what happened within Labor. But, I mean, that's just the way it comes. I mean, a lot of people drew comparisons between that and what happened to Barnaby Joyce, which, Shari and I were reporting on, so I know it fairly well, and have kind of drawn, everybody knew about Barnaby Joyce and didn't write anything, but, the second something happened about Emma Hussar, stuff was written. I think that's a completely false comparison.
Are you suggesting then that shows the sort of left-wing bias of the media?
No, I'm just suggesting that people have it very wrong when they're trying to make these kind of silly comparisons. Because, the comparison that you can make with the Barnaby Joyce episode is when the Daily Telegraph reported that the Nationals were investigating allegations of sexual, I can't remember exactly what they were, but some sort of sexual misconduct on behalf of Barnaby Joyce and a member of the Nationals. That's the comparison. Once you find out about the investigation, then I think you can report on it.
So, Margot, just sticking with the Emma Hussar thing, has the media done a pretty good job on that or not?
I find it really annoying that whenever a progressive woman is criticised, Twitter erupts and says, you're only saying this because she's a woman. And I firmly believe we're not going to have true equality till we have the same type of women at the top as we have men. And I didn't see all those people complaining when Alice Workman, who I think is a brilliant journalist, did reporting on Michaela Cash. So I think there's a gendered aspect to this. And I think that having 20 people making complaints about a parliamentarian is enough for a story. I agree with Kyla. I think it's a really good story, and it would have been negligent to have dismissed it.
Absolutely. I think you're both incredibly right. Andrew Rule, can we move on to a war hero? Yep. Ben Robert Smith is a VC winner, a very rare thing in this country, as we all know. And he was the subject to a very deep investigation, including by the long-standing investigative reporter Chris Masters, into a series of allegations which, probably didn't do a lot for his reputation, it's fair to say. It's very interesting, I think, that The Australian has taken a very different approach to Fairfax on this story. I guess I could argue, well, that just shows the health of, media plurality in this country, that Fairfax takes one view and The Oz takes another.
Yeah.
What do you think, Andrew?
Well, Peter, I think that to be realistic, and of course we're speaking in a cone here, a cone of silence, I hope. Well, and I hope this doesn't anywhere.
Well, it will be. It might be.
I think it's a very tricky state of affairs, because soldiers in the fog, I know it's a cliche, but if you've ever been anywhere where there's danger, and I've just had been just close enough to be frightened, it's the fog of war is a real thing, fear is a real thing, and it's a very different case to be involved in war. And I think a lot of terrible, terrible things happen in all wars, and everybody that's been in them says that. And that people that have been in them, if you talk to old-timers and they feel like being frank, which most of them don't, they will all say that these sort of investigations on either side are sort of pointless because that terrible stuff happens. And I don't want to sort of go into all examples of that, which
no,
I know
of course
from,
not.
But the whole thing's very distressing, and yet I find that a lot of it fairly believable.
Yeah, well,
bad
so
things do happen.
Well, indeed, bad things happen at war and at sea, as we know. And I guess the question is, in the heart of this, is I think, you know, you make the point that, you know, a lot of things happen in the fog of war, and things that are beyond our understanding is, you know, people who've never been close, you know, and certainly never been on the action line. I mean, journalists are, you know, tend not to be exposed to it. Some of us have been, but not many of us. So we're talking about stuff we don't know. But does that necessarily excuse stop us from reporting? And does that give any substance to this claim by Ben Robert Smith that he's being trialled by media?
I don't think we can have a situation where we say, you know, the media is not allowed to report. We've got here a classic example of one organisation breaking a story, and the other organisation, and this could easily be reversed, this whole thing, the other organisation picking up the ball and running back the other way, because that becomes a story in itself. And we all know how that works, that the Ben Robert Smith camp, which is a large and sophisticated one, really, is, you know, Channel 7, are going to spin and leak and try and organise the news to put him in the best possible light. And that happens, and that's what has happened. And
well, is that a healthy thing? I mean, is that, as I said, is that media plurality in action? Media diversity in action?
It is.
It is? I mean, putting aside motive for a second, but in its, you know, it is what it is, right? Once the media, is it, or is it a case of the media being used?
It's undoubtedly being used, but it always has been used by all sorts of people for all sorts of reasons, and the truth often lies somewhere in that murky no-man's land.
Ah, indeed.
In the middle.
Where we've all been, I know, where we've all been. You are listening to The Fourth Estate, and joining us this evening, Margot Saville from, well, I want to say lots of things. You've done so much in your career, crikey, being only a small part of it.
I've worked for you as well, Peter.
I know, and it was a great pleasure. I hope it was for me. Kyle Nasikian, how's it feel being working for Fairfax?
Pretty good so far. I'm very jet lagged, so it's all been a bit of a blur.
It's all a blur. And also Andrew Rule, on the line from Melbourne, associate editor of the Herald Sun, Walkley Award winner, Gold Walkley Award winner, Golden Quill winner. How many Golden Quills have you actually won?
Oh, I think only the one, Peter.
Only the one?
The only Golden Quill winner to have ridden a winner of a horse race.
Wow, there you
allegedly.
Go. There you go. That's the fun fact, isn't it? And fun I fact. Believe you're coming up to Sydney to have breakfast with Winx.
I am. She's my girl.
She's your girl. Yeah, wow. You're a multifaceted man. You really are. Let's finish on a subject very close to all our hearts, which is the media and its capacity to make or not make money, in particular Fairfax. So Fairfax has released what could be their final year results as Fairfax, and it paints a somewhat complex picture. You can only read so much into the results, as we all know. But Greg Hywood, the CEO, has announced a $63.8 million loss. That's made up of a net profit of $124.9 million, which is dragged down by $188.7 million in adjustments, among such things as redundancies. One of the maybe this is the last lot of redundancies as well under the Fairfax name as well. So We could go into the whys and wherefores of all that, but Margot, like me, you're a former Fairfax person. When you see these sorts of numbers, what do you think?
It's like when you get married and you've got to put two households into one. You have to go and clean out the cupboards and get rid of a whole lot of rubbish. So they've just been taking out the trash. So basically the accountants would have just been going through every department they could and find things to jettison before they actually join Channel 9, because 9's the dominant partner.
Interestingly, Kyla, and I won't put you too much on the spot because I know you're a member of this fine empire right now. Although, are you a member of Fairfax or Nine? That's another question for another time, perhaps.
Fine.
I'll take that. That's fine.
Regional papers are feeling the pinch, and the drought is doing them no favours, and that's going to continue. And it's kind of hard from this point of view, from this vantage point of seeing that will Nine keep them? That's another question that we'll explore in another program, I suspect. Domain has long been singled out as Fairfax's golden child, but they recorded a $6.2 million loss. So, Kyla, you just joined the company. You feeling good about that?
Yes, quite good.
Well, that's good. Why?
Well, because if you look at the results, you can see that the Metro Publishing Division, of which I am now an employee, had a rise in earnings, I think, for the second year in a row. Revenue slightly down, but earnings up, and it looks like we've, you know, put on several, you know, thousand online subscribers. And I saw some commentary, actually, you were quoted in it, Peter, in the Financial Times today.
Oh, really?
They had also spoken to someone significantly more knowledgeable than you, which is an investment manager who
know much more than I'll ever.
But in terms of the finances, they were talking about how at least the global trend is towards reputable news organisations once again, cyclical, etc. But for instance, you see it with the New York Times and Washington Post, etc. And they were suggesting that perhaps, you know, look, I don't know anything about the regional publications, but at least with the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, you know, there's certainly a story to tell in terms of, you know, digital subscribers are coming on pretty quickly, earnings are going up, and if that global trend kind of comes into Australia, then, you know, these papers are in a pretty good spot. Mm-hmm. And I should say, I mean, they've just hired me.
Yes.
They've hired a few other people from the Daily Telegraph at the same time.
That would be $15 million.
Well, it could. I know. Well, there's their profit gone. But, you know, but if it was all awful, I'm sure they weren't going to be opening the doors to, you know, multiple new hires while they're trying to save
money.
No,
because let's face it, you're not cheap.
I'd like to think that.
Andrew Rule, one way, I mean, I'm sort of reluctant to ask someone who's employed by News to comment on Fairfax, but I would maybe ask you to think about a broader point, which is the point that, you know, one of the ways of looking at these results, and just to warming up on what Kyla just said, is that maybe there is a greater willingness by audiences to pay for good content. What do you think about that?
I think it's about time, and it's what should have happened from the start. We gave away the media in general, muffed its chances, and did terrible things, which is, you know, a subject you know all about. I think everybody should pay up. I actually subscribe to my own publications as well as others.
You really? Don't they give you a free one?
I buy newspapers, I buy magazines, and I buy books, because I think if we're in them, we get paid by them.
Yeah.
It's crazy if we don't support them.
And you also have Breakfast with Horses.
I do.
Yes. You are a particular wonderful person.
What's on the menu? Oats.
What is
not
on
the menu? That is a very cruel...
No. I didn't mean the horse. I was just asking what was on the menu.
So,
I'm not sure. I hope not.
I hope not. Not that horrifying.
We're not in France, are we? Margot, I'm going to leave the last word with you. It's been a wonderful Fourth Estate. Thank you all for coming. So should we... I know we all by nature want to be optimistic about the future of journalism, but in all reality, should we be? I mean, have we got the right to, when we see results like the Fairfax results and we, you know, I mean, when you balance this all up, do you think it's a great time to be alive as a journalist?
I think it is a great time to be alive. I think things can only go up from here, can get better. And I think that Trump and Brexit and all the things that have been happening around the globe have made people more aware of good news and accurate news. And I see The New York Times, The Washington Post, and now The Herald, subscription revenue is going up. So, I'm pretty optimistic. Buy the paper.
Buy the paper, subscribe to your website, listen to The Fourth Estate, of course, but buy The Herald for all sorts of reasons. Subscribe to Crikey, get a subscription to The Herald Sun, buy a book, ride a horse. Thank you all so much for coming. This has been The Fourth Estate. I would like to thank Kyla Lusikian.
No problem, anytime.
Yes, and all the best in the new job, whatever it might be.
Thank you.
Margot Saville.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a great pleasure having you. And Andrew Rule, who's probably about to file, about to get on a plane, about to probably meet Rupert Murdoch. All those things and probably a lot more. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
This has been Peter Fray. I'd like to thank you all for listening and come back next week when Anthony Dockrell will be in the hot seat for another wonderful edition of The Fourth Estate. Good night.